Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Liberty Financial Group Half Year 2023 Results. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. James Boyle, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Rachel, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to the half-year results for Liberty Financial Group for the first half of financial year 2023. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of all the lands that we are meeting on. Pete and I are presenting today from the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to elders past and present, as well as to any traditional owners who may be with us today. Thank you for taking the time this morning to come and hear about our first half. As has been our tradition, I will open with some comments summarizing or highlighting our performance over the half. I'll try to quickly hand over to Pete, who will take you through the numbers in more detail, and then I will loop back after Pete's done that to talk about the business update and outlook going forward. So starting with the highlights, we're delighted to be able to report that we have, in challenging conditions, as you have seen from others in the last week, we have been able to continue to grow our portfolio over the half. And that is the continuation of our diversification strategy reflecting in our portfolio balance. As we shared with you last time we were together, we have simultaneously felt the pressure of successive interest rate rises and debt capital markets in terms of our net interest margin. But the combination of those two significant developments, we think, has delivered a very sound underlying performance for the business over the half. As such, we finished the half with a stronger balance sheet than at any point before and a return on equity of 17%. We are, at the end of this half, starting to see the impacts of the 9 successive interest rate rises on our borrowers in small changes in arrears that we expect will continue into the second half of the year. As you know, we place high importance on the digital experience of our customers, and we were delighted to be the first non-bank lender to receive accreditation from the ACCC under the Consumer Data Rights Regime as a data recipient during the half. And as you are aware, we have continued to deliver stable distribution to all of our security holders. When we look at how those observations reflect in our numbers, it will be no surprise, I'm sure, to hear that our net interest margin did compress when compared to the prior corresponding quarter by 27 points. Although we were able to hold our net revenue at $311.4 million, which is 4% down over the period, and deliver an underlying net profit after tax and amortisation of $104.8 million. We did see a small increase in bad and doubtful debts of 3 basis points. We continued to invest in the growth areas of our business, which is reflected in part in the increase in our cost-to-income ratio. That is, of course, also slightly impacted by lower net revenue. And as covered, we delivered a distribution during the half of 21 cents, consistent with the prior corresponding period. In terms of the operating highlights, we were able to grow the average financial assets from 12.4 to 13.1, comparing the periods. We set a new record in originated assets of 2.9 billion over the half. We reduced the impaired loans by nearly 22% to $135 million. We did continue to invest in our growth areas and increased our headcount by 10%. And although slightly reduced, both broker and customer net promoter scores remain, we think, in industry leading positions at 79 and 55 respectively. I will hand over to Pete to take you through some better detail.
Thanks, James. The Liberty Group achieved statutory net profit after tax and amortisation for the half year ended 31 December 22 of $110 million. This result was 10% lower than the prior corresponding period and 1% higher than the most recent half. After adjusting for the impact of the revaluation of ALI, underlying net profit after tax and amortisation was $105 million, or 14% lower than the first half 22 and 4% lower than the second half 22 respectively. During the period, Liberty moved to 100% ownership of ALI. In connection with the transaction, ALI's future net commission income was independently revalued. As the observed average life of each ALI contract is longer today than it was at the time of the initial acquisition 5 years ago, the value of net commission income increased. This increase was accounted for by increasing the net asset value on our balance sheet and by an increase in net profit after tax. After accounting for additional acquisition consideration and tax, NPATA was positively impacted by $5 million in this half year. As this earnings impact is not expected to recur, it's been treated as a non-underlying throughout this results analysis. The trajectory of underlying NPATA has been driven most materially by the expected increase in the benchmark cost of funds, being the bank bill swap rate, or BBSW. The increase in BBSW has resulted in a reduction in NIM for the half to 2.87% compared to 3.14% in 1H22 and 3.05% in 2H22. During and since the IPO process, we've consistently explained that past NIM results have benefited from an unsustainably low BBSW of 1 basis point. We explained this low level was temporary and would reverse as interest rates increase, which would consequently result in a reduced net interest margin. BBSW increased materially in the first half as the RBA cash rate increased, and as such, NIM has fallen. During this half, average BBSW was 10 basis points higher than the average RBA cash rate. In comparison to the first half 22 results, the increase in BBSW amounts to 19 basis points. We have chosen to pass on RBA cash rate changes to customers, but no more than the RBA changes. Consequently, the 19 basis points increase in BBSW has been fully absorbed into earnings. Not passing on more than RBA changes, in contrast to other non-ADIs, was a deliberate decision to support our customers and our business partners. This outcome of an increase in the cost of funding and reduction in NIM was expected. So in light of this expected change in NIM, we consider this half-year result to be sound. Total revenue was $564 million for the half, an increase of 28% compared to the prior corresponding period, and an increase of 32% compared to second half 22. The increase in total revenue was driven by both an increase in asset yield as a result of RBA rate increases being passed on to customers and driven by a 6% increase in average financial assets. Net revenue, representing total revenue less interest expense, was $311 million for the half, a decrease of 4% compared to the prior corresponding period and a stable result compared to the more recent half. The impact of the increase in BBSW, however, offsets the increase in average financial assets and asset yields. Bad and doubtful debts have been negligible through the reporting periods. Loan write-offs, which are low, have been covered by existing provisions, and collective provisions at each balance date have been determined to be appropriately established to support portfolio risk and not requiring material change. The cost to income ratio was 25.8% in the half compared to 21.9% in the prior corresponding period and 23.4% in the more recent half. Total operating expenses increased by 13% and 10% in the two halves respectively. The increase in personnel costs reflect an increase in FTE staff and wage inflation. Other expenses increased from investments in technology and our brand. Of course, part of the movement in the first half cost to income ratio is also explained by the reduction in net revenue. Average assets were $13.1 billion for the half, an increase of 6% compared to the prior corresponding period, and an increase of 3% compared to second half 22. New loan originations of $2.9 billion was a company half-year record, and therefore higher than the two more recent half reporting periods. Average assets and new originations achieved growth in the half, notwithstanding subdued demand for credit and an elevated level of customer churn in our residential lending segment. Group asset growth was achieved from the growth achieved in each of our motor, SME, SMSF and personal lending portfolios. Loan yield increased to 6.71% in the half from 4.92% in the second half 22. This increase of 179 basis points comprises increased yield from passing on RBA rate increases. Offsetting this increase is the impact of differing yields between originations, discharges and the average portfolio. Positively, group yield expanded with a continuing shift in the portfolio mix towards higher yielding assets in the secured and financial services segments. The expansion in yield from the shift in asset mix was 8 basis points in the half compared to 5 basis points in second half 22. The level of lending income between periods is consistent with movement in new loan originations, and commission income decreased in the half compared to the prior corresponding period due to lower transactional volume in New Zealand and was stable compared to the second half 22. Liberty's total cost of funding is comprised of two components: the benchmark funding margin, which in our case is principally the 1 month BBSW, plus the investment return provided to our funding and debt capital market partners. Average BBSW increased by 215 basis points during the half to 239 basis points. And our funding margin decreased by 18 basis points during the half to 145 basis points. So in total, cost of funds was 384 basis points in the half, an increase of 197 basis points compared to second half 22. The funding margin reduced in this half from a change in the liability mix. We don't expect this benefit to persist into the future periods, however, as demonstrated by the exit NIM being 10 basis points below the first half 23 average. Accessing funding is important in being able to realise our growth ambition. We were successful in raising new and retaining existing funding of $5 billion since 30 June 2022. We issued three new term securitisation transactions, established a new auto facility and renewed all of our maturing facilities. Importantly, total wholesale funding limits increased to $7.1 billion at 31 December 22, a level in excess of last 12 months originations of $5.6 billion. This funding activity places us in a strong liquidity position to continue to support our customers moving forward. Consistent with previous results presentations, we've deconstructed BDD into its four components: the value of realised losses, the release of specific provisions relating to loans that have left the portfolio, the increase in specific provisions relating to loans still on the balance sheet, and the change in the collective provision. The absolute level of realised losses are low, and always more than covered by existing provisions. The increase in specific provisions has been consistent, reflective of our stable portfolio risk characteristics and borrower behaviour. The collective provision, as mentioned, has remained consistent throughout the reporting periods as it has been determined to be appropriately established to support portfolio risk and not requiring material change. When aggregating these four components, BDD has been negligible through the reporting periods. The next slide characterises the portfolio into three risk stages and outlines the level of provisions supporting the portfolio. Summarily, we remain strongly provisioned, which will provide support to future earnings in the event unexpected customer outcomes arise. The absolute value of loans in the high risk stages 2 and 3 has remained relatively stable through the reporting period, notwithstanding the increase in interest rates and cost of living. As a percentage of total receivables, loans in short and long-term delinquency has actually reduced at 31 December 22 compared to the year earlier, 3.4% from 3.6%. These measures are evidence of the resilience of our borrowers from external factors, whether they relate to COVID, higher living costs or higher interest rates. The collective provision calculation has been reset to current and best estimate future economic conditions and to reflect how customers may be impacted into the future. The collective provision also reflects the current portfolio mix, which has changed over the reporting periods. After factoring in the impact of potential future economic scenarios, provisions total $65 million or 49 basis points of average financial assets at 31 December. This level of provision is six times more than the underlying annualised level of realised losses. As such, Liberty is strongly provisioned at 30 December 22. As noted earlier, total operating expenses increased in the half by 13% and 10% compared to the prior corresponding period and second half 22. The increase in operating expenses reflects an increase in FTE staff, wage inflation, and investments made in technology and our brand. An interim distribution of 21 cents relating to the 5-month period ended 30 November 22 was paid to security holders in December. This interim distribution amount was consistent with the prior period and implies an annualised yield of 13% based on a security price of $3.99. The total FY23 distribution per security is expected to range between 40 and 80% of group NPAT, consistent with prior periods. The final distribution is expected to be paid to security holders in August 2023. Finally, we remain a strongly capitalised financial institution and have strengthened the balance sheet over the past 6 months. Liberty Financial Proprietary Limited, the principal operating company in the group, had its investment grade rating affirmed at BBB- with a positive outlook following release of our FY22 results. Liberty is the only non-ADI in Australia with an investment grade rating. Our leverage ratio, as measured by total assets divided by net assets, reduced to 12.5 times at December 31, 22 from 12.8 times at 30 June 22. This ratio being materially lower than any other non-ADI, along with our investment grade rating, demonstrates Liberty has the strongest level of equity capital supporting its financial obligations in the non-ADI sector. We believe capital strength is critical to ensure the financial durability of any business, and in particular when market and economic uncertainties emerge. Connecting financial performance and position together, LFG generated underlying return on equity of 17%. This ROE outcome is greater than the major banks with similar leverage and similar to non-ADIs for half as much leverage. Overall, we have delivered a sound result given the current environment. We've achieved positive portfolio growth, delivered a continuing shift in the portfolio towards higher margin assets, maintained a balanced portfolio of risk assets and performing customers. We've managed our operating costs, which together delivered a leading risk-adjusted return profile. This concludes our remarks on the results, and I'd like now to hand back to James to give a business update.
Thanks, Pete. So in terms of our business updates, as we've covered, we believe a sound result for the half, which is very much validation of our long-term strategy to diversify the business and expose ourselves to different markets such that we can deploy capital into those spaces that we are best placed to do. When we look at how that played out over the half, we're particularly proud to have been able to deliver record originations and continue to grow a portfolio in a market that has been much tougher for non-banks than it has for banks. There's no question that in our residential lending business, we have had slower demand for new business, and we have had continued heightened activity with regard to departing customers in the form of discharges. However, simultaneously, we've been able to continue to grow our SME and SMSF lending. We've also pushed into new distribution partnerships in our motor lending business, both in the secured vertical, as we mentioned we would last update, and we've continued to be able to grow our financial services vertical, particularly in the personal lending space. We have, of course, also seen an increase on the demand of our team in helping customers who are challenged by increasing interest rates and increased cost of living, which we're starting to see now show up in arrears numbers. If we look at the originations by segment, you can see that in our residential lending business, we had a 7% reduction half on half, down to $1.7 billion, but that was more than offset by a 40% increase half on half in our secured vertical and a 20% increase in financial services, particularly driven by personal lending, which meant, as covered, that for the group over the period, we grew originations by 7% and set a new record for the half. As that's reflected in the loan portfolio, the residential portfolio is down, reflecting the reduced activity and the increased discharges. The secured portfolio is up to $4.2 billion off the back of accelerating growth in SME, SMSF and motor lending. We've continued also to see that strong growth in our financial services portfolio, up to $496 million now, which meant across the group we saw a 2% increase half on half. With regard to arrears, our 90-day delinquency number has continued to trend down, which is positive. It means, as Pete has covered, that we think that we're in a good position to continue to manage the environmental challenges and help our customers through these difficult times. It's notable to us that our 30-day delinquency had increased by the end of the year, and as I can recall talking to many of you about last time we caught up, we expect that as that continues over the second half of the year, we'll continue to see that trend of increased arrears. When we look over the horizon then for the coming calendar year, our view is that economic indicators support slower credit growth. However, we've seen that show up in results of others. In particular, I point to the AFG Mortgage Index, which I think was down roughly 20% this quarter compared to the corresponding quarter last year. However, there's no question that there are many fixed rate loans that continue to mature on the balance sheet of all the major banks, and as such, there is a heightened state of activity to variable rate lending, and we have opportunities to selectively participate, although we would comment that that market is particularly competitive, more competitive than we believe we've seen it previously. We do expect that we will need to continue to provide greater support to our customers through these continuing interest rate increases as they adopt their spending patterns to cover increased repayments. As Pete's mentioned, we do expect that The NIM reduction reflecting the one-month bank bill swap rate will normalise at some point in the future. However, we would say that that won't be until we get a better sense of what cash neutral is, hopefully over the next half, certainly this year. We have seen improvements in auto supply chain recovery, which is, of course, supporting our growth in our motor lending business, and we see the ongoing demand from our customers and business partners for improved digital engagement. So, in summary, over this half, we are proud to have delivered measured growth in financial asset in our financial asset portfolio. We've diversified our customer solutions while balancing margin pressure. We've continued our steady distribution to support our security holders. We are in our strongest position with regard to liquidity and capital than any point past. We continue to make investments in diversifying our customer solutions and providing ways to help customers and deploy capital in areas where we are best placed to do so. And of course, as already covered, we continue to invest in our digital solutions for same. So that concludes the formal part of our presentation this morning, but we'd be very happy to take any questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your questions. Your first question comes from Min Palm with Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Hi, James and Peter. Good morning. Two questions, if I may. On the mortgage NIMs, it looks like it was down a bit less than 30 basis points, half and half, down to about 2.06 on my estimates. Can you give us a sense of what mortgages you're writing? Has the mix of originations via prime and non-prime changed? And you've sort of touched on this on your comments, but does it make sense to write prime mortgages at all in, at this point in time, given how competitive the banks are?
Thanks, Min. Great questions. I'll give the generals and I'll let Pete confirm or otherwise your numbers. The answer is we certainly find ourselves better positioned to help customers that banks are not as well help as well able to help. But we also continue to see popularity, particularly through mortgage broking channels, because of our better digital engagement and because of our service. You know, this uptick in arrears that we're pointing to suggests that the stresses of 9 successive interest rates and inflation are starting to show up on, you know, in people's bank balances and on their path forward. And so in a lot of ways, we feel that we're well placed to help customers in those times. I haven't observed any significant shift from our regular mix with regard to prime and non-prime. And to answer your question, you know, in a market like this, does it make sense to write prime mortgages? Well, we're not, you know, the banks have got very, very aggressive of offering cashbacks, every one of them. They've got very, very aggressive of offering deep discounts, but they're selective in their discounting and the way that that's applied. We still think we have a competitive and easy to understand product. And I think when customers are being enticed with cashbacks and deep discounts, there's some scepticism around how long those discounts will last and, you know, getting their heads around that. So, yes, we've seen a drop in demand as that competition has heated up, and certainly we don't expect that to change anytime soon, but we're still able to find customers who, you know, prefer our service and our engagement and, you know, happy with the prices that we offer. Pete, in terms of the NIM question.
In terms of the mix, NIM, Min, you know, it's exactly the same. So in terms of whether it's, you know, loan purpose, owner-occupiers, investors, whether it's high, the LVR bands, whether it's prime, non-prime, full doc, alternative verification, the mix of flow and the mix of the portfolio remains very stable and consistent.
Great, thank you. And maybe just on to my second question. Impairment charges seem to have risen quite a lot in the secured finance segment. I mean, it was obviously off a very low base. So just wanting to see if there was anything of note that raises concerns there, or if you're just building provisions given the loan book growth. And maybe if you could actually just provide some guidance on what you would consider through the cycle bad debt charges are in that business, given it's a combination of obviously a lot of things like SMSF and SME and motor finance. Are you able to provide a comment?
Yeah, thanks, Min. So the answer with respect to the cost of provision is that although the absolute value on the balance sheet remains relatively stable, I think it might have gone up by $1 million, the mix within has changed. And that's consistent with the change in the mix of assets. So it's true that there's a higher level of provisioning sitting in the secured finance portfolio, but that's because we've got more assets on balance sheet now. So the overall coverage of losses in the motor space is about 250 basis points. It's early 300 basis points in personal loans. And in SME, SMSF, it's about 20 basis points. And in residential lending, it's about 10. So they are the our best estimate loss assumptions at each asset type through a cycle, and that's, and you see movement in the different segments consistent with the change in asset mix. Does that
make
sense?
Great, thank you. Yeah, thank you. That was very helpful. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Josh Freiman with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, thanks for the opportunity to ask questions. Just on my first one, on that funding cost benefit, I saw you guys got that 18 basis point benefit in the half and funding margins of 145, which is a pretty strong outcome relative to peers who saw increases of about 8 basis points. I guess you guys called out that one-off liability mix change, but I just wanted to dive a bit deeper and ask, what are you guys doing differently here? How do you look at the mix of issuances versus warehousing? And how do you guys see funding spreads tracking from here? I guess I'll wait till you guys answer to ask my second question.
Thanks, Josh. I appreciate your question. I think I'm not going to be able to comment about what the others do, so let me just talk about what we do and you'll be able to triangulate. Essentially, you know, we've made it our business. It's been a very important aspect of our funding to remain very durable. And one of the aspects in achieving that is making sure we've got lots of headroom in our limits. And you will see that at this half, it's about 50%. So in last calendar year, as everybody I think well recognises now, term securitisation funding was challenged, principally because the demand for investment assets from particularly offshore was subdued. And so what that resulted for everybody issuing were lower absolute value of transactions and higher margins. But and we observed that across ourselves, but also particularly other participants. But because we have maintained and we continue to maintain very strong headroom in our wholesale facilities, that is the facilities with our banks, we were able to utilise them, those facilities, to a greater extent than prior periods, whilst still being able to, provide the financing necessary to our customers. So essentially, we utilised lower cost wholesale funding in this past 12 months as compared to term securitisation. And we were able to do that because we were well placed with a durable platform through that period. So that's why our margin principally fell through the half. So that's the answer to the first question. And the second question was, what does funding cost look like moving forward? So we have, listened to some feedback from all of you in announcing an exit NIM. The exit NIM is 10 basis points below the average because that funding cost benefit has mostly reversed. That is because we have started both to use new term securitisations, as well as we, as stated in my remarks, we renewed a couple of facilities through the half, which at a higher cost than when they were set the year earlier.
Thank you. Understood. And I guess if I just move on to a different second question, I'm conscious of the prospectus of the IPO. You guys provided a bit of colour on the breakup and characteristics of the secured finance book. I'm conscious risk characteristics and margins and so on would be pretty different perhaps across auto finance versus the secured SMSF housing book. Are you guys able to provide any colour on the breakup of mix and characteristics within that book?
So the thanks, Josh, again for your question. The secure segment is made up broadly 75% SME and SMSF and 25% in auto assets. That mix has moved toward motor finance, as we've spoken about at each of our result updates since IPO, and we expect that to continue. The competitive dynamics in our offering has meant that we have achieved and expect to achieve higher growth in auto financing moving forward than our other asset classes. So that mix will continue to shift toward autos. Within each of the asset classes, though, the risk positions continue to be very stable. In particular, the SME, SMSF portfolio, in terms of all, again, its risk dimensions, it's exactly the same as IPO. What I would say about the asset, or the auto finance, is probably, I'd say that the risk position actually has improved. The reason for that is principally due to being able to find customers through a new distribution channel, being the dealerships. And dealerships, what that has meant for us is a higher proportion of newer cars and a higher proportion of we would call prime borrowers. So that shift has moved to less risk assets as an overall mix within the auto portfolio.
Thanks for your answers. Chat later.
Thanks, Josh.
The next question comes from Tom Strong with Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, James and Pete, and thanks for taking my questions. The first one, just to follow up on the previous question, secured finance. I mean, you've talked for a couple of halves about the change in the distribution channels in auto, and pleasingly that's come through the originations in the portfolio. How should we think about those tailwinds from a market share perspective against what's happening in the economy and I guess some affordability constraints for customers, which will be a bit of a drag?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. It's a good question. I think they're at odds with each other, sure, but I think also, as Pete mentioned, the growth that we're currently getting in the auto segment through is new to us insofar as historically the vast majority has been through intermediated networks, brokers, and we have developed new relationships with distributors, dealers. And, you know, there's a benefit yet to play through in that segment with regard to supply chain logistics. You'll recall that, thank you to the great freeze in semiconductor production during COVID, the entire new car market got fogged up and, you know, you had to order your cars 12 months and 18 months in advance. That gap hasn't zeroed in yet. I think cars are still sort of 6 months off. So, you know, that'll be interesting because as it starts to improve, we expect that there'll be slightly downward pressure on the used car prices. And then both of those are occurring at a time where the RBA continues to put interest rates up and, you know, dissuade people from discretionary spending. So I hate to say it, but in some ways your guess is as good as ours about how that will play out. Our sense is that demand will continue. We're coming off a small base in terms of market share, so there's plenty of growth for us to get, and those vehicles need to be there's a backlog of orders that are going to bring those vehicles to market that haven't yet got finance that we'll continue to be able to participate in, at least through the remainder of this calendar year would be our expectation.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I appreciate those dynamics. And perhaps just a second question on costs, if I could. I mean, you saw a bit of pressure in the first half. Obviously, wage inflation is a given. Just can you provide some thoughts on where costs go from here? Just noting that some of your peer results, we've seen cost pressures emerge in technology, data, cyber, broker services and support. So the range of headwinds on the cost front. Can you just give some indication on where you see costs going in absolute terms, perhaps over the next 6-12 months?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fundamental, the core driver, which is headcount growth for us, I think we sort of had a 5% increase half on half. I would think it's a good thing if we continue to do that, because we only do that when we're seeing opportunity to invest in, to deploy capital. So in that regard, I'd sort of hope that trend continues. Of course, we seek to be more efficient as well with the team that we have. So that's not to the exclusion of efficiency dividends, that's on top of. The second part, again, we're sort of stuck in a moment where we're both throwing darts at a board. When inflation is curbed, how long will it take for that to be reflected in wage expectations? And I don't know the answer to that. I can remember chatting to you and Brendan about that previously. But certainly what we have felt and what we've been clear about is over the last couple of years, we're very proud of the team that we have. We think they do an exceptional job, and we've reflected that in wages appropriately. And of course, we'll continue to do so with regard to the environment that we're operating in. So, will we see that change by the end of this year? You kind of want to hope so, because it means that the RBA has been successful in getting the inflation genie back in the bottle. Whether or not you believe that's going to happen, we can all share our views on. There has been, no question, a heightened increase in technology costs and compliance. It'll be no surprise to anyone on the call that cybersecurity continues to be an area of significant investment for all organisations, and I can't see that slowing down. Frankly, it feels. I mean, we already had the position that that was an area that needed consistent investment before this half, and then some of the events that we saw at the end of last year with some businesses who were unfortunately targeted by nefarious actors has only steeled our view that that's important as well. So I expect that will continue to have an underlying push on our costs. So we do try to run the business as efficiently as we possibly can. We think we are more efficient than most in our sector. We certainly expect to maintain that. But you're quite right in pointing to the fact that even running a business efficiently is a slightly more expensive exercise today than it was 6 and 12 months ago.
Okay, no, thanks. That's clear. Appreciate the answers.
Thanks for the questions.
Next question comes from Matt Dunger with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, James and Peter, for taking my questions. Just wondering if I could start off with the Stage 1 collective provisions increasing $4 million, obviously well ahead of the portfolio growth. Have you changed anything around ECL assumptions, or can you talk to what's driving this, please?
Thanks. Thanks, Matt. It's really mixed. So as I sought to answer Min's question earlier, the fact that the mix of the portfolio overall, $13 billion, has moved toward the motor portfolio and the personal loan portfolio that have where we have seen higher levels of losses, obviously being different assets. As a consequence of the change in the mix of assets, so too does the provision need to be realigned to the current mix. And that's the nature of the absolute change.
Great. Thank you, Peter. And if I could just follow up, asking on the lower transaction volumes that you've seen in New Zealand impacting commission income, how are you viewing the risk of a slowdown in Australian commission income as the RBA, you know, falls behind the RBNZ on raising interest rates?
I think, Matt, our view is that the increasing interest rates will continue to dampen the amount of activity that occurs in the home lending segment in particular, as we saw with the AFG numbers that I mentioned. But offsetting that, of course, is, not tens but hundreds of billions of fixed-rate loans that are yet to mature over the remainder of this year and next that will need to, find themselves in variable rates, variable home loans that suit them. So that activity will no doubt continue. And our view is that the rampant competition that we're seeing from banks in the form of cashback offers and deep discounting is directly related to that reality. So in some ways, the ponderous question, the philosophical question is what would activity levels be if we didn't have that TFF money still in the system that was being refinanced? Well, I guess we'll find out in 2025, but they're certainly down year on year.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the question, Matt.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Jeff Cry with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. Thanks for your time. Just a question on margins. So in contrast to your peers, you've not done any sort of out-of-cycle repricing on your mortgage book. How should we think about that repricing lever going forward, and how do you broadly think about balancing the margin management versus volume growth in the mortgage segment?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Great question. I think the way to think about that lever is it's always available to us, but our view, as Pete shared, has been through this half and through these 9 increases that we better serve our customers by adopting the line of the OCR, and we better serve the business at the same time. As you've heard, the amount of competitive activity and discharges in our home lending book is directly related to price, not just for us, but for the entire sector. And we continue to be chosen among business partners for our consistent delivery of competitive pricing and good service. And in some ways, it's a break of trust to, for example, a mortgage broker who recommends us. And then finds himself having to have a difficult conversation with a customer should we choose to increase rates by more than the average market rate. So we're very conscious of all of those realities when we take those decisions, and we don't take them lightly, and I can share with you that they were hotly debated, but we think that we struck the right balance for security holder interests, for customer interests, and for business partner interests to date.
Great, thank you. And then just following up on some of the prior questions, for the secured finance or asset finance market, can you just talk through how you think about the volume growth outlook over the next 1 to 3 years?
Yes, I think, as Pete mentioned, we think that our ability to continue to drive double-digit growth in the motor space is appealing. We've got new distribution relationships opening up. We've got a supply chain that will play to us. And notwithstanding the earlier question about from Tom about how the environmental situation will dampen demand in that space, We're also not competing with major banks in that space as we were 2 years ago. So we feel that over the next 3 years, that'll continue to be a good area for us to compete and deploy capital. We feel similarly about the SME and SMSF space, largely because we're very good at understanding the bespoke circumstances of customers' needs in that space, and that's something that's better done, in our view, by a small fleet-footed finance company. I think the larger banks struggle to be bespoke for specific customers, and you know, we've seen that play out. For example, Judo has had similar growth in that space off the back of a differentiated service model that better understands the customer circumstances. So in those areas, you know, we think we should be able to continue growing. I would say 40% half on half growth is pretty significant. I wouldn't be locking us in for that over 3 years, but we certainly think it should be double digits. And that'll be offset then by just making sure that we're making the right choices in the home lending space, and continuing to help the customers that we're better placed to help. And our view is there's probably going to be more of those customers 1 and 2 years out as the stresses of the economy start to show up. Although, as Pete mentioned earlier, we're yet to see that play out in our originations at this stage. So it probably keeps going backwards for a little bit before we can turn it around, but at some point there'll be an inflection. And then in our financial services vertical, and particularly in our personal lending business, MoneyPlace, we've been the beneficiary really of some other listed players who have struggled to be as consistent with their service delivery, because before the interest rate increases, they were playing a very logical strategy of market share acquisition using price as the main lever. They're reverting away from that now because capital is, you know, expensive and hard to come by. And we've been able to, again, maintain a very consistent offering that through time has become more and more appealing both to customers and to intermediaries who help customers with those needs. So, you know, 20% or 19%, I think it was, is we think very good in that space, and that should be able to continue for the short term, but again, in the medium term, revert to double digits over the 3 year period.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
There are no further questions at this time, and I'll hand back to Mr. Moyle for closing remarks.
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you everyone for your support and your interest this morning. We certainly look forward to catching up over the coming days. I hope everyone has a good Monday and a good week. Thank you.